Podcasting is a complicated profession, which is why we're here to discuss The Mandalorian, currently airing on Disney+. My name is Dan Morin, and I am joined, as always, by your Star Wars pals. Tony Sindelar is here. Hi, Tony.
Hi, Dan. Hi, Kat. Hi, nerds.
Kat Benish is also here. Hi, Kat.
Hello. And what is your favorite episode of Andor, and why is it this one?
Yeah. Remember that time in the Book of Boba Fett where they're like, hey, let's just insert a different show in the middle of this season. Well, they thought that went gangbusters. So we're here to discuss season 3, episode 3 of The Mandalorian, chapter 19, The Convert, in which
double meaning.
Indeed. So I'm just going to do a super brief overview because I'm going to say this. Essentially, there are two stories here. There is a bookend story about Din and Bo-Katan returning to Kalevala and her home basically getting destroyed by some Imperial warlord.
With a lot of
TIE fighters. And then at the end, them fleeing to basically meet up with the Mandalorian covert. And the armorer, etc., who welcome them back as Din has been redeemed for bathing in the waters, and Bo-Katan has, on a technicality, made herself eligible for membership in the Children of the Watch.
But did she ever really leave the Death Watch? We'll talk more. And then there was an in-flight video in between.
Yes, yeah. As Kat pointed out, during their hyperspace journey, they watched a movie about Dr. Pershing, who you may recall worked for Moff Gideon and previous to that worked for The Client way back in season
the
one.
The Client.
Werner Herzog. Way back in season one, who basically did some experiments on Grogu. And then we are led to believe, I guess, later on may have done some experiments for Moff Gideon using Grogu's blood. I had forgotten many of these things because it's been a while since those episodes happened. But essentially, he has turned over a new leaf and joined the New Republic as part of their amnesty program, in which people are given numbers and there's some interesting vibes happening here. He recognizes an old colleague, Ilya Kane, who is the comms officer on Moff Gideon's ship and who tries to convince him that, like, hey, your research was so important. Maybe you should not give up on that, which he eventually gets talked around to, including going to liberate some lab equipment from a Star Destroyer that's being decommissioned, at which point he is basically, turns out that was a sting, and Kane has basically, thrown him under the bus with the New Republic, because that apparently is her gig, is rooting out people with sympathies to the Empire. At the end of that segment, he is put in a machine that is supposed to be nice and relaxing, only she cranks it up to 11.
And it's got some safety setting issues.
Yeah, it seems like it's not going to go well for Dr. Pershing.
Nope.
So where shall we begin? Let's start with the Dr. Pershing
story. Let's talk about Pershing, then we'll loop back around to Bo-Katan, because I think there's a long conversation we had about Bo-Katan.
This episode, to me, and I think I'm not the only one, somebody commented very early on,
before I'd seen the episode,
like, hey, did that episode feel like Andor? And I was like, again, please do not send me messages about episodes on like 8 a.m. the day that it comes out. I usually don't watch
save those for 8 p.m. please.
Or put some stuff in there that is just like wildly wrong of like, man, did you think Grogu was gonna do X?
I can't believe Grogu ate the mythosaur. That doesn't even seem possible.
You want to be extra cool, people? Route 13. Route 13 is a classy way to send somebody a message that, like, you're letting them know, like, this has spoilers in it. You know, I know this is very old school. This is like a Usenet thing, but I don't know. I've got a Route 13 app on my phone. I can also kind of read Route 13.
Everyone who didn't know that. Yeah. I originally thought that was Return of the Jedi 13 until I was taught that.
That's my favorite Return of the Jedi.
Also, they really,
1 through 12, they were still working out the kinks.
It's like Land Before Time. I got really good when they got to the double digits.
Route 13 is you shift all the letters forward 13 spots. So, yeah. But it's a common cipher.
If you're on Mastodon has content warnings you can use to shield spoilers, so I recommend that as well.
But every and then I'll have a bunch of friends on Twitter or even on an email thread doing Route 13 about, you know, The Expanse or the latest episode of Star Trek or something, and it's like they're talking about a thing and I can scroll past it without any issue. issues with spoilers, but and then I can come back to it. And it's exciting because it feels like you're a spy. using the most basic of codes.
So to me, this episode feels a little bit like, I don't think it was probably super influenced by Andor, if only because...
I don't think so, because of the
production schedules are weird
also,
in that way.
But I like, Andor is more than... A lot of it is like, does Andor equal Coruscant? You know? And to me, that's a little bit of a... Well, there are also some meetings.
I do think it was interesting that the things that were Andor to me is like... So focus on the intrigue, less the action set pieces, right? That's, and again, you can got to this without having known you were tying into Andor directly. And then two, the focus on one, not cutting back and forth, right? We stayed with Pershing for almost the entire episode. That felt
I would argue as well, the Mandalorian has dabbled with this a little bit. Even this season, we got Greef Karga in episode one talking about how he didn't want to replace the Empire with the New Republic in terms of it. And like, once again, what we see here is, I think this is a fascinating story about how the New Republic has grown very fast and is not able to, A, completely wipe out all the remnants of the Empire, and B, is kind of like overburdened with trying to deal with this. Like, look at the amount of equipment they have, right? They're decommissioning ships, they're throwing stuff out that is... honestly perfectly good, and like there is an argument for like, well, why are you decommissioning all this stuff, as
because it's got
says.
Scary logos on it.
They're called the cogwheels or cogs.
And also the fact I was going to say that the New Republic itself, the scenes that are damning are the scenes with the droid talking to him about, like,
that is what I think is so interesting.
Do you feel sympathies or whatever?
Your droid therapist.
But not only that, but like, it's like, oh, we can't be bothered to have a person here to talk to you.
Nope.
You're answering canned questions from a droid with no nuance.
So I think what that implies, though, is two things. Like, one, and I think you see this more in, I want to like point out some, I'll say like, Pinochet, which, anyways,
Chile?
I'm probably gonna, thank you, all my history wrong, so writers, please correct me, but the countries where they've had to do like basically truth and reconciliations, just because of the horrible things that happened in a country, and like, you can't be, in some ways, I feel like the New Republic is like, we can't basically expunge everyone who's associated with the Empire, so how do we as a society grapple with that and allow people to come back in? And I think it's actually a really interesting place to go with that, is like, how would an amnesty program work? Like, what boundaries would you put on that? I actually think that's like a very thing of like, oh, I can absolutely believe that this exists. But what's interesting on the droids is, this is the first time as viewers we have seen the New Republic or the Republic associated with unnamed characters and sort of a massless lead, versus for us it's always been like the scrappy names and the heroes, but now when it's just a bureaucracy, it's much harder to idealize.
So I will say, I mean, I think I saw a lot of people who did not like this episode or didn't care for this episode. I enjoyed this episode.
I did as well.
It is very weird.
Yes.
Because 100%. It is almost, I mean, it is effectively not the Mandalorian episode. I mean, kind of, but I think, you know what I think was kind of, I assume intentionally intended to set us up for that is like, the previous episode was also not, was like only half of a Mandalorian episode, because the Mandalorian was out of commission, then it's a Grogu and Bo-Katan episode. So I think there's a little bit of easing us in. It is weird because, you know, the show was such a Outer Rim episode of the week, and now it's like, let us tell you about what is going on in the world. And you have to, I guess you have to take that a little bit on faith that it's like, does that matter to the Mandalorian? Because that's who this show is about, right? And so I guess I'm assuming that it will, and that, you know, Moff Gideon is back, and you know, or somebody worse than Moff Gideon who's got all his notes is back. And because I'm assuming that, like, this is the, you know, because we've got in the Outer Rim somebody that has way too many TIE fighters and TIE bombers doing stuff that's not supposed to be possible.
Right.
And then we also have, and that's on the Outer Rim, and then we also have, like, at the seat of government, what appears to be, and it's, you know, it's ambiguous, but what appears to be some kind of double agent.
Can I positive
infiltrated
theory?
Them.
So, and this is, and I apologize for viewers who are not, or listeners who are not watching the Bad Batch part right now.
Yeah,
but I think
some parallels.
There are some really strong parallels there, and I think it's very interesting, too, that we have both these shows going on at the same time, and both shows really are kind of working towards cloning Jedi, or at least that's always been my theory with the Bad Batch, especially with Omega. So I would be, I think would be amazing and awesome if it turns out we sort of get a reveal on both of them at the same time. They're working in the same direction.
But they're 8 years apart.
I know.
Or more. They're more than that. More, they're more like more 15 that, right? years apart.
Yeah. Which is interesting. Yeah, I mean, no, but it is narratively, interesting. That is wild if it's like, let's have our live action show that's 15 years in the future and our animated show, which have a significant overlap in viewers, we assume, but not 100%. And they're like converging together to like...
Well, again, they didn't. They did something. The whole thing with Grogu on a different show together and didn't even include it in the flashback. So,
right. Well, and there is something interesting, and we'll talk about this in a bit when we get to the Bo-Katan and Din story, about the interplay between the live action and animated shows, or lack thereof in cases. But I wanted to say it's a couple things about the Amnesty program that I thought interesting. One, I thought extremely dehumanizing that they give them all numbers. Like, I understand there are
like the Empire, though. Yeah, like the Empire.
That feels kind of weird, right? Like, and I...
Well, and I wondered, I thought of Operation Paperclip was the thing that I thought
What's
of.
What's Operation Paperclip?
Right, Nazi scientists were all basically
after World War II.
Oh, right. Yes, thank you.
The Americans intentionally, not out of any kindness or goodness of their heart, but out of these are valuable commodities and we don't want the Russians to have them, go and bring in a bunch of Nazi scientists. The rocket scientists are that get the big names, but there are other ones as well. And I mean, basically, they kind of don't cover this as much, but like, you know, use them to start NASA, like, you know. So I guess that's the question is, like, for example, like, you know, is Pershing given a job out of the kindness of his heart or because we don't want him there? I mean, there's the weird kind of whiplash between he's giving like a big TED talk in an ornate auditorium and then he's sitting in a cubicle doing
very similar to where
Cyril
Karn works in Andor. It's very clear.
Yeah. But also, I mean, it's to your point, like in the case of the, you know, the Nazi scientists, it's because they wanted to put them to work. Whereas in this case, it seems more about like,
or to keep them out of the hands of their adversaries,
which it seems more about here, right? Like, 'cause they give him a dead-end job where he's not doing that, but and they also put him in like essentially what is a halfway house basically for recovering.
I was worried when he was going home, I was like, what kind of horrible, you know, prison are we gonna see him in? And it's like, it's okay, it's not great, it's fine.
Yeah, if you mentioned the Empire,
there's a picnic table. He has a nice little room.
And they are clearly very interesting, too, sort of like the block leader, whomever that is, was clearly, I think, there to, I think, ensure everyone's getting along. And, like, they never said explicitly, but I think very clearly his role. And also
we have the one line of dialogue from those weird nobles when he's giving, he gives his speech. And, like, the person who, like, doesn't remember the difference between, like...
Yeah, which I thought was, like, that had some really nice tiebacks to Mon Mothma, sort of the ruling class doesn't really care as long as they're alive. Styles and get disrupted. But I was going to say about going back to the Amnesty housing, there were some interesting comments. It might have just been one comment basically saying is like, the Empire would have never done this, which was .. The Empire would have just shot us everyone.
Right. Exactly.
Right? Yeah. So, comparatively, it's interesting. I think what I struggle with is going back to, I forget the name of the communications officer. What was her name?
Kane.
What is her motivation? Right? That's, I think, the really big question of this. Is like, is she a plant?
Yeah.
Or is she with the rebels? Not the rebels, excuse me, with the New Republic.
Or is she, I mean, and even if she is with the New Republic, she seems like, at the very least, she is an opportunist who is just like, I need to, or a survivor, right? Like, who's like, I'm gonna play along and like meet my quotas by like trapping a bunch of people into this, and then, you know.
But then after he's trapped, jumping ahead, I feel like the part of the middle is not super exciting. Where
other
they go
than
on a
amazing, I love
transit.
Any science fiction show that shows public transit is something that is nice.
Yeah.
It's really cool to see.
Toonsday. Public transit. They go to the derelict Star Destroyer, which I'm like, why is that on Coruscant? It seems like, put that
we saw that in Bad Batch like 4 or 5 weeks ago, because they decommissioning. I love that.
Which
that
was again, like,
you figure they do that on a garbage planet, right?
Yeah. When did when does Bad Batch have so many more episodes?
We haven't seen this week, so four.
Yeah. And how many more episodes?
The endings don't line up.
They don't line up.
If that's
okay.
But so, I mean, she gets her collar, but then cranks the dial to presumably either torture him or...
Yeah, she's sadistic or she spies. Like, she's trying to wipe his memory so that only the Empire has it, or she wants to make sure that this knowledge is so dangerous it can never be used again. And like, and why does it matter for the story of The Mandalorian?
Yeah.
Because it only applies to Moff Gideon.
Right. I mean, and that's the thing, like, you know, that is the question, because it is a function of whether or not she's doing this just for kicks. I mean, like the way she carries it out lets her maintain her plausible cover, right? Because nobody else is there. She cranks the thing up and walks away, you know, basically sits there. And so she can keep, she can stay implanted there if she is a mole, right? Like she has not, because like the question would be, if they just wanted to prevent him, she could have murdered him very easily. She didn't need to befriend him. She didn't need to go through all the trouble, find him biscuits and all that stuff. Like she could have just murdered him and walked away off into the night. But the fact that she's...
But it's not clean, right? You can't do that again and again. Eventually you get caught, right?
But that's the point. Is he the only asset that's that they're concerned about, or were there more, right? Is this just an example? Like, I don't... Again, I don't think we know. I agree that it seems to lead to Moff Gideon. This may be a spoiler, but it's not really a spoiler related to the show. It's just sort of a meta thing. Like, they do press videos for these things, right? Like, they do interviews, like Entertainment Weekly and all these stuff, do big video panels with the cast. Giancarlo Esposito has been interviewed on several of these. It seems like a no-brainer that he is going to show up at some point.
And they don't even talk about he disappeared on his transport.
Right, they have all the rumors about where he went.
And comic book rules, he's got to come back.
You don't see a body, right?
I mean, he didn't die, and we didn't see a body.
The only counter argument I have to that, if you want to get into a little conspiracy corner, is that that is all a fake-out. And it's like Thrawn out there.
That would be awesome. Well, we also expect to see the rise. When do we see the rise of the First Order?
It's probably starting now-ish.
And is Thrawn connected? Or has Moff, I always call it Moth, but it's Moff. Moff Gideon teamed up with Thrawn?
Or is there,
I guess I'm a little confused. We don't know what happened. So... Grand Moff Tarkin. Grand Moff Tarkin. Another Thrawn, who becomes, what is his rank? Admiral.
Grand Admiral.
Not a Moff at all. For people who don't know that, he's a character that appears in Star Wars Rebels. He is notable for being one of the few like alien officers in the Empire. He was a reintroduced from very popular series of books, and he's like the most brilliant mastermind strategist in the Empire. But he his fate is a little uncertain after the events of Star Wars Rebel, which take place, you know, 15-ish years before this, or at least 10 years before this.
And we know that as of season 2 of The Mandalorian, Ahsoka Tano was looking for him, suggesting that he is...
But maybe that's because they're on their own show. We don't
also a thing.
Yeah.
So it's unclear then what her motivations are. She goes to a great extent to basically set him up so that she can wipe his brain.
Yeah. It is interesting. We are, like, again, to kind of metagame it a bit, we're 3 episodes into an 8-episode series. I feel like there were some big names that were mentioned that are in this season that we haven't seen yet.
Like whom?
Christopher Lloyd and Tim Meadows are in this. And we have not seen them yet, to my knowledge.
What? Because I don't think I knew either of those things.
Yeah, well, I only answered the questions that were asked of me.
And a lot of times these big, like, the name actors, they often get for
5 seconds.
It's
like what's his name, Frick, the alien.
Zach Braff in Obi-Wan, or I feel like there are some other people who showed up in season 1 of The Mandalorian for, like, either very briefly or like Nick Nolte doing voices or whatever.
I'm still expecting Timothy Oliphant to come back at any moment now. Who was the sheriff in the sheriff?
Marshall,
thank
you. And he started in here and then went to Book of Boba Fett.
Yeah, great character. Yeah, so. Anything else we want to talk about on Coruscant and Pershing?
I want to go back to, like, the thing that I find the most interesting about this, which I like, is the same thing that they've done a nice job of with... There's a nice tie-in here, both with Andor, as you mentioned, with the ruling classes, but also that provides a through line to The Last Jedi with all the casino planet.
The casino, yeah.
Right? With, like...
What's the planet called again?
Canto Bight.
Thank you.
Where essentially, like, this idea that, A, the rich are going to keep getting richer, like, and like, they're going to be unaffected, they're going to be above the whole fray, and also this idea that the New Republic... Like, kind of the opinion that the show dances around a bit with, the Jedi are not the holy, like, good guys, right? Like, they have their own problems. They are not entirely great at dealing with, like, yeah, this is a challenge to bring the Empire people back in the fold, but you're not exactly treating them great either. And in some ways, you know, it's hard to shift all the bureaucracy and everything like that. So you're kind of, you know, forced to build atop what came before, even though that's what you fought against, right? Like trying to picture the New Republic swooping into Coruscant, and you can't flick a switch and be like, yeah, oh, everything's great now that we're in charge. Like, no, there's a lot of entrenched stuff there, and it's hard to like turn on a dime and you know, essentially purify, quote unquote, everything. So I kind of enjoy the point that the New Republic is not necessarily untarnished. And it's a little more gray than we had led to believe.
The one thing I'll add on this is, and I think it was done intentionally, and maybe I'm reading into it, is I do think when we saw Pershing interact on, excuse me, Dr. Pershing interacting on Coruscant, every time he saw an alien, he seemed uncertain, and which I thought was really nice, because again, it could have just been every time he was a stranger, he wasn't certain, but it seemed like it was mostly directed at aliens, applying again, like the Empire... the aliens were not typically, or the non-human species were not exactly at the forefront or very common for in the Empire.
And I do want to give credit here to both Omid Abtahi and Katie O'Brien, who play Pershing and Kane, because I think they both did really well in this episode, and an episode that relies so heavily on the two of them having kind of a chemistry, which I think they managed to pull off. And like, even though I felt very confident, as I think, Kat, you mentioned too, we both felt confident that Kane was going to betray him, it felt more damning as time went on, because there's like that scene where they're walking around at like the park with the rock, and like, you know, she's like giving him like a popsicle and everything, and like, you're like, well, oh, wow, she's really like pushing this hard. And
and the show does the cool thing where you think that she's going to betray him by... stealing his science right?
Yeah.
And it's like, no, she's actually an agent for the Republic.
You know? I did not see that coming.
Yeah.
I mean, I feel like I probably would not have jumped from train car to train car. That would be when I would have checked out of that.
Especially because the droids can just press a button and it goes like zip, and they can just walk right over.
Yep.
Also, somebody commented about like, oh, don't they have any like facial recognition or all this stuff? And I was like, that's not really how Star Wars works.
Yeah. That's not really how Star Wars works.
A low tech future past.
Yeah. If you shoot out the cameras in the detention block real fast, you're fine.
Yeah. In theory, they could have just kept going on the train and like, you know, ridden it somewhere and walked away and never come back. There's billions of people on that planet.
A trillion, in fact.
Yeah, if they have facial recognition, it's all been like optimized for like the alien species that they don't like. Yeah, you know, right. Like it's real great at identifying Jawas or something horrible. You know,
sees right through those hoods.
Yeah.
Okay, should we shift gears and talk about our other plot?
Let's do it.
Bo-Katan and Death Watch.
I did want to mention, I thought the fight scene up top at the front of the show is great.
That was really fun.
It looks good. I liked Din jumping out with his jetpack and like getting into the N1 right before they blew it up. That was cool. Lots of great flying. And it was a truly shocking moment, I thought, when the bombers like blow up her moping castle. Like, where is she?
That droid that brought her emails. He's presumably dead.
But I thought that whole scene was fun. It got great sort of choreography. The bit at the end where she like flies up and does the like one turn, and it was nice Star Wars dogfighting. Thumbs up on that front. The end of this episode is fascinating. We should also mention the other thing that doesn't come up is that Bo-Katan, she quizzes Din about whether or not he saw the Mythosaur without coming clean that she saw it.
Yes.
And so she's kind of playing those cards close to her.
Which again, the show is, and this is kind of where we're going to right now, is like the show is a slow burn for Bo-Katan is going to be the one to reunite the people of Mandalore. And by seeing the Mythosaur,
but under
like,
what
she
banner,
the,
Kat? Under what banner?
Right. Let's talk a little bit of the history there. But she's being the one who's the, I want to call her the chosen one, because I feel like that's a loaded term in the Star Wars universe. But at least the
choosy one,
the one who chooses,
choosy Jedi, choose Chiff. I don't know.
Yeah.
So we'll go ahead.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. I it is fascinating. Great. I don't know if Katie Sackhoff is doing all the work when the helmet is on. I did see an interview with her where she talks about acting with the helmet on versus the helmet off, so she's at least doing some of it. But the body language in that last shot where like the armorer is like, well, technically you didn't take your hat off, so you're cool with us.
Your family.
And you can see this moment as everybody's like patting her on the back and whatever, it sort of like zooms in on the helmet. And even with the featureless helmet, she's thinking like,
What am I? How did I get here?
Is this? Yeah. I feel like it's a little, not exactly scheming, but like there's a bit of like,
Yeah. You know, maybe this cave is better than my empty throne room.
Well, can we do a quick
place I can do moping? Do you have
a moping chair?
A moping corner. The armor will tell you every corner of this room is graded for moping.
Just stay away from the alligator. Can we do like a real quick recap, everyone? Like, because I was trying to remember this and rereading on Wikipedia before it happens, of like Bo-Katan's relationship to Death Watch. So Bo-Katan joined Death Watch, may have been a founding member of Death Watch.
She and Pre Vizsla kind of she's like his second in command or co.
They go off to the Moon Concordia. They join up with Maul and Savage Opress. This is all in Clone Wars. They come back and basically do a coup of Mandalore, kicking out Satine, Bo-Katan's sister, who's currently the ruler, which is a duchess. Why it's a duchess, don't ask. It's a translation thing, I'm sure.
It's like how some princesses are also senators.
Yeah, very questioning. And then Death Watch, then Maul imprisons Satine, but basically takes over Death Watch, and that's when Bo-Katan's like, whoa, we can't have a non-Mandalorian running Death Watch. That's when then she flips and tries to, and I think at that point Satine is dead, and Obi-Wan shows up trying to rescue Satine, and then she flips and says, okay, I'm now with the Jedi, and they go on from there. Is that roughly how you guys remember it too? And then obviously there's the whole plotline in Rebels where she's like, I think, shifted away and saying, you know what, maybe I'm now more about the unity, because at that point they're fighting the Clan Saxon, and that's when she gets the Darksaber from Sabine.
Yeah, that's about right. I think this illustrates a fascinating point. This is what I wanted to get to earlier when we talked about the interplay between live action and animation, is that this show kind of wants to have its cake and eat it too, in terms of not feeling like you are required to do the homework of having watched all of these episodes and know all of this history, but also it wants to also kind of build on that, right? Like, and it's tricky because it is telling a story that it's like the tip of an iceberg, but I worry that they are, by sort of not wanting people to have prerequisites for this, they're ignoring or at least downplaying some of the nuance and stuff. Like, the fact, as I mentioned to Kat at one point, I came across a comment online somewhere that was talking about, like, okay, so, like, Bo-Katan led Death Watch and now is hooking up with the Children of Watch, and, like, nobody mentions any of, like, none of it comes up in the text of this show, right?
Well, like, I think the question is fundamentally is, like, and Bo-Katan does say this in the last episode, right? There's been a lot of infighting, and for reasons that are too complicated to go into, which I'm like, thank you for, you don't really need to explain the entire history. I think the question is, season one and two was really setting up Children of the Watch to be a bunch of zealots, right, on the outside. And now we're coming back around to, should we think of them as some sort of extremist sect or not? And that's the part that I struggle with. Like, how should I as a viewer, how should I be perceiving the Children of the Watch? We don't like Vizsla because he's just sort of like a bully.
Which Vizsla? The one in this or the one in the...
The Vizsla in this one. Okay. The one who duels Din. Yeah. But it's unclear to me whether or not we should like Children of the Watch.
I agree. I don't think the show has not really come down hard on whether these people, like Bo-Katan called them a cult, essentially, and derided them as sort of a, you know, extremists. But now she seems to, like, there's an argument here that either you could take the view, if you want to be cynical, that she's found it expedient to be able to, like, well, I can kind of build support here. Or there is a more deeply seated emotional thing of feeling like, oh, I was alone and now I have a family, quote unquote. And I don't know. That's how you can't decide.
Because she's the thing of, like, she bathed in the water, she saw the Mythosaur, and, like, maybe she thinks, like, maybe this really is the way. And maybe she's come back to that. I don't know.
I don't think we know yet, but...
Yeah, I mean, I think there's there's two threads there, and right now they're tangled up, and the question is, like, which thread matters? Because there's Bo-Katan's, like, spiritual journey, right?
Yes, it
seems
exactly.
like that she's going on, where she started out moping on a throne room where it's like, I have a throne room, but I literally have no followers, right?
Right.
I don't even have the five guys that followed me when you met me last season. They are mercenaries now, right? So, like, I've got nothing, or nothing that matters to me. And, you know, and I don't believe in anything, right? So will believing in stuff come around? But it is, I don't know. I don't think the show... I mean, I think the show... I would be confused if they suddenly, like, the Children of the Watch are such kind of extreme zealots with weird beliefs.
Yeah.
And they're a cult, right? They are a cult, and they act in culty ways. And, for example, there's the whole thing where, like, the Mandalorian doesn't know that they're a cult, doesn't even know that, like, they're unusual. He's like, this is the Mandalorian way. What do you mean there's other Mandalorian that take their hats off all the time? That's heresy. That's not allowed. In that kind of, like, cutoff, which is always a little bit weird in Star Wars, where we do some time compression things of, yeah, like, you know, so you have, which I'm kind of more willing to believe here because they're a cult, and I think they probably, like, it doesn't seem like they have a lot of talking, and there's probably not a lot of outside news getting in, because it is like, wait a minute, wasn't Bo-Katan, like, real important to, like, you or your founders, like, 10, 15 years ago? Like, yeah, we're not going to talk about that. It would be a little bit like if, like, George Washington showed up and we were like, whoa, the guy from the money, you know?
Welcome to our democracy, George.
Yeah.
You're welcome.
Here. Yeah. Yeah. Democracy, I mean, you say. Big fan.
Yeah.
Teeth chatter.
And to the point, like, you know, like having a Vizsla there too, right? And she has, yeah, a history with Vizslas. And again, this is a place where the show seems to, like, well, we want to have the Easter egg of this guy's a Vizsla. And it's because some of this is, like, what's the word I want? Non-diegetic, essentially, because it's
more general than we're memes.
I mean, like, it's outside the world of it's meta, right? Like, it's, yeah, you know, we want to have Jon Favreau voice this guy because he voiced Pre Vizsla in the Clone Wars. So, like, oh, it's an in-joke, right? But at the same time, it's like, well, but now you've worked yourself into a corner because, like, Bo-Katan showed up and is like, oh, I knew your dad or whatever. Like, yeah, but we're not going to talk about that because we don't want you to feel like
you have to
go watch all the cartoons, well, to get it.
I mean, it's like, you know, Darth Vader almost walking past C-3PO and RDD2 onto the Dantive IV.
Not
going to
worry about that.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, they look familiar.
Like, if this movie was made today, like, if they remade Star Wars, we'd have to include jokes about,
yeah,
Darth Vader being like, I used to have a droid like that. You know?
Yeah. Like, guys, every road goes through Tatooine. What are you going to do? You
know? It's actually the center of the galaxy.
It is weird. And, you know, it is strange where, you know, and people were really upset. Remember the first year of The Mandalorian where it's like, how come he's saying this stuff that's inconsistent with Rebels? Mm-hmm. What are these Star Wars people doing? They don't know what they're doing. And it's like, actually, they have like 55 pages of Mandalorian culture notes that they're still working on.
They're the people who invented that whole Mandalorian take their hat off all the time. It's not like Dave Filoni does, oh, I've never heard of a Mandalorian before. I don't know where this is going. And I think, you know, this goes back to, I think, something we talked about last week a bit too, which is this idea of, like, is there a through line here where Din realizes that, like, cults are bad? Or is this the through line where Bo-Katan is like,
cults
maybe
are great.
This is useful.
I could see a very weird, basically, yeah, crossing where... Din has the falling out with the Children of
Din's
the Watch.
Like, wait, whoa, you'll let anybody in now? What, you? I had to go bathe in those
Bo-Katan
waters.
Bo-Katan is like, these are my people, or these are the only people I have.
Yeah,
right?
Or she makes a play to take them over, essentially.
Yeah, you know, I'm assuming that the Armorer doesn't have a long con, because I feel like if you have a long con, you don't live in a cave. A crocodile.
Well, by a crocodile lake. It depends at what point you are in the long con, Tony. If you're only halfway through the long con.
I just, I'm willing to believe that, like, she, the Armorer is operating from a, like, we need people for this cult. I need tithes. And not from a, like, I'm going to use Bo-Katan for something.
I do think that Bo-Katan's... I still go back to sort of two facts. One, sort of the metagame fact right here is, like, Bo-Katan, Kitty Sokhoff is listed as one of the stars of the show, right? She's not a reoccurring guest star. And then two is Bo-Katan's motivation pretty much since Clone Wars has been for the good of Mandalore. Doesn't always go the right direction, but, like, that's always why she's done what she's done. I think. I actually don't remember what she was motivation in Clone Wars, so if that's wrong, yeah, it's fine. But from, like, Rebels onwards, let's go with Rebels onwards, her motivation is the good of Mandalore and uniting Mandalore. I feel like she can't... It's not too easy for her just to give that up. So I've got to imagine that's still her motivation in this season. It's just going to take her some time just to remember it. So I can't... My belief is still that the arc of this season, which I felt even before the start of the season, is the unification of Mandalore.
I think that's still true. I think the other thing that slightly worries me from a meta fashion is, can you ever get to the point of having Din realize that he doesn't need to be in the cult because from a production standpoint, we can't get Pedro to show up on set that much. And now Katie Sackhoff doesn't have to show up as much. Like, is there a cost element to this? Like, it nags at me. This is the back of my head. Like, yeah. Oh man, now we just have like a lot of helmeted people for this show. And everybody has to do dubbing their voices. And yeah.
I think you're spot on, Kat. And I mean, especially, I thought more of the season was going to be like getting to Mandalore and figuring this stuff out. And that's all taken care of, right? Yep. Mm-hmm. You know? So it's, I guess this season will be about bigger things and we'll see how much we like that. I think that is a little frustrating to some people who really like the episode of the week, Western hijinks of season one of Mandalorian, which I liked too. I'm trying to put myself, we only get a little bit of Bo-Katan on screen this episode, but she is grappling with a lot of things. Her house got blown up.
Yeah.
You know, that would set a lot of us back. She's found out that like Mandalore is actually a place people can go, right? Everyone had been told it's poisonous and you can't go there.
Still not great,
but like people have been told like you can't go there.
Right.
Yeah.
And now it's like you can walk around here. So it's like, you know, it's not great, but for example, you could theoretically start a settlement there, right? And maybe
hard
that's
to grow things
would need
in glass.
Yeah,
but yes.
I mean, people, you know, it might. Let me just say, it would at least be physically possible.
Yes.
I'm not telling you that it's economically possible, but it's physically possible. And also that this creature that she basically didn't think existed or was extinct exists.
Yeah.
Right, this mythical thing.
Mythosaur.
It would be literally like, you know, if there was something, some folklore thing that was like, oh, that's just folklore. And then like you pass by.
You show up and ride in the Loch Ness Monster, right?
You're like, woo! Yeah, you would be like, well, hold on.
I
have to reassess. Also, Dan, just stick with me here. Loch Ness Monster, real. Outside your house. P.S. Your house was just blown up. by the Loch Ness Monster. Unrelated.
Although we can't eliminate the possibility.
Third, it turns out there's a warlord exists in the world that is powerful enough to blow up your house and you didn't think that was possible. So like basically like half of the things that you took for granted about the world, not true.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I do wonder from the production standpoint of like, where are all the other Mandalorians? The only Mandalorians we've seen are really these Mandalorians and then like Bo-Katan's four friends.
A lot of them are dead, right? We know that because the Mandalore was blown up. We assume a lot of people died in that. The Empire wasn't like, you can all get off.
Right. So the question is,
they did not have a reintegration program.
It's also possible the unification of Mandalore isn't really unification at all. It's like, it's this really is all that is left of Mandalore.
It's also possible the unification is about just the people, right? And not necessarily the planet. Like, less because we've been to the planet and the planet
Mandalore
is
just an idea.
It is. It's in their mind. But like, the planet's blown up. Maybe you don't want to go back to the planet, but maybe you can still make an argument for your people, like getting together and proving
at least living somewhere that's not
and
a
then
secret
there's other planets in that system.
Well,
there's moons
and
stuff.
They can go to like Bo-Katan's moon, which like then we have to go back to like, well, that's where the Empire is too, so they're gonna have to band up to like take back the moon and fight against it.
Well,
where's the show going?
It's big,
and also
okay.
I was gonna say Bo-Katan has proven though that she can fight with the Darksaber, right? So I do think like Bo-Katan's gonna get the Darksaber. Like, she's shown that she's going to get it.
Okay.
How many times has she saved the Mandalorian now?
Oh,
yeah,
several
that's
times.
Like, I feel like
several
that's
times.
The same
it
as
just,
what
it feels like you get a little punch card, and when you get up to five, it's like you get the dark.
Shin has definitely been a little, or Din, or Din has definitely been
Din,
a little
dopey.
Yeah, this season.
Yeah.
I got two I words from you that's going to clear up the whole thing with, you know, how they're going to deal with the
real
Empire,
estate,
how they're going to deal with all the Mandalores and everything,
inflationary policy.
Moped gang.
Vespa gang, please.
Vespa gang.
Vespa
sorry,
gang.
Vespa gang.
Yeah.
Over under on Boba Fett showing up at some point this season.
Oh, God, I forgot about him.
I was going to ask over under on the romance potentially blossoming between the two of them.
That's awkward to make out when you both have helmets on.
Clang.
I still hold out hope that that Rex will make an appearance at some point because I feel like he got Temuera Morrison. You know, they even had that little hat tip back in Obi-Wan where he played the
clone.
If he
shows up, I think he's going to show up in the Ahsoka show.
Yeah, that'd be good. I really miss Rex. All right. Anything else? Oh, I have a letter we need to address.
Letters.
Let's read it.
From listeners.
It's from listener TJ.
Hey, TJ.
Listener TJ.
Hello, Star Wars friends.
That's
us. What was that latest episode all about? Why did we get a subplot? Well, it was most of the show, so is it still a subplot? About former Imperials who are now reformed, except one who still wanted to do his work when he was talked into it. And why did she do that exactly? I don't understand. And then she turned the mind flayer to 11, which it seems like someone is going to notice. And since she was the only one in the room, the whole episode made no sense to me. Did it make sense to you? If so, please take pity on me and help me understand. Thanks, TJ. We did obviously discuss
this. We should record an episode about this.
Sorry, I should have read this up front, I guess.
You have a lot of great concerns, TJ. I agree with you again. Like, someone should be able to go back and say, what was the like the data log of this device, and was there a video camera in that room? Or also,
Star Wars doesn't really do that.
Public's not going to care. What do they care? Yeah. They won't care.
He seems happy.
Yeah, our job is complete.
Here's what I think this episode. I think this episode is a fake out where you think that this episode is about Dr. Pershing, and that this episode is actually like this is actually like origin story for Kane.
I think there's an argument. Like,
I would agree with that.
And I think they're almost certainly, just given the proximity, has to be a tie together between Kane working as a mole and there being a huge Imperial presence in Mandalore. Like, there's some connection there with, like, the Empire's not as dead as you think, or at least there is, you know, the Empire's gaining steam, or a remnant or a warlord is gaining gaining steam.
How one would think
my guess is we...
Oh, sorry, go ahead. Yeah. No, go ahead.
My guess is we don't see Dr. Pershing again.
Yeah, I think that's likely.
He's not gonna be. I feel like if we do, it's just to show us that he is basically like fried, like in his.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But his research, that still remains an open question.
It goes back to will they link up with the Bad Batch? I will say we didn't forget to mention that I think Easter egg of the show is that when he is being captured, he at one point says, "It's a trap," to Mon Calamari.
It was a trap. Mm-hmm. Yeah, when he's about to get his brain erased. Yeah.
The actor who plays Kane, who's been in a lot of superhero
Black
media,
Lightning, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
and Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and
she's
apparently
Quantumania, which I haven't seen.
The actor is 33. So
I was gonna make a snide comment of like, well, she's from Coruscant. Like, how long ago was Andor? And
Oh, you think she's Cassian Andor's daughter?
It's actually with like Cyril Karn and our favorite intelligence officer.
I don't think Cyril Karn's gonna make it out of Andor to have any kids I don't know. There's a lot going on in this episode. I kind of, again, like Tony, I think I enjoyed it as an interesting digression, but it is tricky when you have an 8-episode series to be like, let's take an entire episode or the bulk of an episode and like tell you this other story. So either it's got to come back around to play into everything, or then it definitely, like, we get to the end of the season and find, like, it wasn't really it didn't really link into anything. I'm going to have some questions.
Likewise. And that's where it kind of goes back with, I wonder, too, going back to how they did episode 1 and 2, of we think that potentially that Bo-Katan scene had been moved from episode 2 into episode 1. There's something here in the writing where, like, we are like introducing characters of the first, like, we're not cutting back and forth and building characters. We're just sort of getting, I don't say dumped with the character for 30 minutes and then told to learn everything about them and then leave once again, which again, it's a technique. It's a style. It's not my favorite style. And I think it makes it hard to, when you get a little bit over a long period of time, I think it actually builds more because you sort of like, almost like an investment, right? You get interest while you're not seeing them directly.
It is. It's always weird where you look at, say, just constraining ourselves to the streaming service this is on, the Marvel shows, and each Marvel show is very much its own thing. And then we look at the Star Wars shows, and it's basically like they're all just Dave Filoni shows, and we put different labels on different ones for tax purposes, probably. You know?
With the exception of Andor, which feels totally
which
different.
Which was its own thing.
I mean, that's because Tony Gilroy ran that, and neither Filoni or Favreau had any worked on it at all. And it does
but
feel
like between
very distinct. Yeah.
Bad Batch and this, it's just like, this is just what's happening in Star Wars this week, people. This week in Star Wars. I hope you like it.
We should note this episode was directed by Lee Isaac Chung, who directed Minari, which was a very lauded film a few years ago. And Kat, you'll be very excited to know he's also set to direct a sequel to the 1996 film Twister.
Wait, really? Oh my God. Twister is a great movie.
Why does that movie need a sequel? Can I ask you that?
I thought they already had a sequel.
Did it?
Yeah, that seems like the kind of thing that would have a direct-to-DVD sequel.
Would you like to guess what the name of the movie is?
Oh, wow. I just saw what it is.
Do you want to guess?
Tsunami?
No, it's even better.
No.
Twister 2?
Oh, so close. No. Twisters. I have a lot of questions.
Wait, so there wasn't a sequel already?
Not that I know of, but...
I was so sure there was a sequel to Twister. I was wrong.
It's about the cow.
I really enjoyed that movie.
I've never seen it.
I saw it in theaters years ago.
Next week's episode, chapter 20, is written by both Favreau and Filoni. This week's was written by Jon Favreau and Noah Clure. He is basically the only non-Favreau or Filoni person to write an episode, which also feels like, if you want to get meta, like they basically, somebody came in with a pitch about this, like kind of one off, and was like, hey, I want to do a story about Dr. Pershing. And they're like, yeah, sure, write it up for us.
I think Noah Clure was a writer on Book of Boba Fett, so I think that's
interesting.
Yeah, so he's a guy who's like, I just generate Star Wars where it ends up. That's on somebody else to figure
out. Actually, this episode was originally part of Book of Boba Fett to that point.
maybe they had this lying around, you know.
And next week's episode is directed by Carl Weathers, who directed, I think, an episode last season as well.
I love Carl Weathers. My first real introduction to him was Arrested Development, which is how
Where
I always think of him.
Himself. Well, a version, a hopefully very
extreme
exaggerated
version of himself. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, is it even maybe a parody of himself is perhaps the better. He's not doing great in that.
Yeah. I will say, so like big picture though, I did enjoy this episode. I think it asked some really interesting questions about the New Republic. And like from that point of view, it was good. I just don't know if it fits in The Mandalorian, right?
Yeah.
I think that's my one issue with it, is like really interesting, good questions, good world building. Is this the right time and place for that story?
Yeah.
This is a place where, Dan, I get confused by how TV writing credits work, because Jon Favreau is listed as the writer for all the Book of Boba Fett episodes, but Noah Clure is also credited as staff writer for 7 episodes.
Staff writers, yeah, there's a WGA crediting system that I don't know enough about to explain, but essentially I think it has to do with amounts of work
so
contributed.
He's involved, but not enough to like to be listed as the writer.
You have a writer room, and a lot of those
people
contribute
to episodes.
Well,
that's why I always get confused when it's one name. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, okay. I mean, even The Mandalorian does. It's not like Favreau. I don't think Favreau and Filoni are just sitting there.
Yeah. So Favreau comes in
themselves necessarily.
They come in with like, here's my idea for this episode. You guys figure out some dialogue and Star Wars stuff.
And then we'll punch it up or whatever. You know,
we'll tell you if you're done. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. But so we are next week. We will be halfway through the season. And we'll see where we're going.
Yeah.
Do we know what next week's episode is called?
Just chapter 20 so far.
Oh, all right.
Like to release
that
ahead of time. And we are getting close to the end, as we mentioned, of Bad Batch. I don't know how we're going to handle that. We're going to do two
episodes. Don't know. They overlap now. How do we do that? Probably depends how much editing you want to do, Dan.
There are currently, after this week's episode, 3 episodes left, and the last 2 air on the same night. It's a 2-parter, I think. So,
all right.
Yeah, did you watch the most recent one?
We're behind one.
So. Okay, I will tell you, the most recent one seems to be another one of those stealth 2-parters. Right.
Well, that's all we got. We should remind you, as always, that if you would like to send in a letter and have us read it and perhaps answer some questions on the air, you can always do that by emailing us at acp@theincomparable.com. You can also find us on Mastodon at the Zeppelin.flights instance at ACP. Please write in. We like answering questions.
If not, I will start making up questions. So if there are no questions next week, guys, I will be making up at least 3 questions.
Please write in.
It seems like a good system to me.
That's all we got for this week. Of course, I would like to thank my co-hosts, as always. Tony Sindelar, thank you for being here.
Goodbye, nerds.
Kat Benish, always a pleasure.
Super fun. Have a great night, all.
Thank you, everybody, for listening and tuning in. We appreciate it. We will see you next week. But until then, may the Force be with you.